We're going to continue with Jeff Belanger when we come back. We're going to talk more about the Lizzie Borden murder house. Just unbelievable. But we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie back with you. Jeff Belanger with us. Jeffrey, tell us your role with this stream.
So I'm going to be one of the people that will be coming on to talk about the crime, talk about my own weird experiences in that house. And just talk about kind of all things Lizzie Borden. I mean, she's a cultural phenomenon. She's a true crime phenomenon. She's a paranormal phenomenon. It's big.
Tell everybody hi for me.
I will for sure. Yeah, thedarkzone.tv is where the stream's going to happen. We did this at the Conjuring House back in May, and it was really intriguing to give folks access just 24/7 around the clock. There's going to be cameras set up in all the various rooms of the Lizzie Borden house. So
that's a major production, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot going on for sure. And how cool is it that we live in a time where this stuff can get set up? I mean, it wasn't that long ago. You would have needed satellite trucks and everything else, and now we can do this, and we can do it safely. And so you can, you know, if you've always wanted to see inside the house or investigate it, you can do it virtually from wherever you are, which is pretty special.
Will they let anybody in the Lizzie Borden house? Do they take tours of that place?
Well, yeah, during non-COVID times, yeah, they offer tours, but it's also a bed and breakfast. You can stay overnight, as I have.
Anything creepy happen when you did that?
The very first time I visited the Lizzie Borden house, and this must have been, I don't know, maybe 2006 or 7, we were there with a small group doing a live radio broadcast for a local radio station, and it was about 11 o'clock at night, and they were closed down for about 2 weeks for some minor renovations, painting and things. And so it's just the four of us inside the building. We're in the basement about 11 o'clock at night, and we hear these scampering footsteps from the side door right to the kitchen, right above our heads. And we're right at the bottom of the basement stairs. We just look at each other and say, oh, no. You know, first thought is some kids from Fall River just broke in or someone. And we got to go up there. We got to call the police. We got to manhandle them out. We're in charge of the house right now. We're up those stairs, George. I couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 seconds between hearing the footsteps and being in that hallway. And we look, and there's nothing there. And I checked the door. It's locked just as we left it. And all of us heard it. All of us reacted the same way. And that was my very first night in the building. It's just a place that's just full of mystery. The strangest thing about those footsteps is it sounded like kids. And not one. It sounded like two. Like two running kids just scampering through the hallway. And what's intriguing is that when you study this case, you learn that Andrew and Abby Borden were not the first two people murdered in the general property. They're not even the first two Bordens to be murdered on the general property.
Wow.
50 years earlier. It was 1840. The house right next door, Andrew Borden's uncle owned the house, and his three children, his wife, who was not Andrew's aunt by blood but by marriage, second marriage, She snapped one day, and she tried to drown all three of her children in a cistern on the property.
Oh, my God.
She succeeded in killing her 1-year-old and 2-year-old, Holden and Eliza Borden.
Jeez.
And then slit her own throat. Those two kids died pretty much within feet of that house, and there was one little newspaper article. Yeah, it's so horrible. And they're buried in the same cemetery as Lizzie and her parents. And the strangest thing is Lizzie and her parents are buried in the same family plot, just a mile up the road from the Lizzie Borden house in Fall
River. How big is Fall River?
It's a pretty good size. It's a seaport. It's right on the water, not far from Providence, Rhode Island, just kind of over the line on the coast there in Massachusetts. So the shipping was a big thing in Fall River, and it's a pretty good-sized city.
Fall River, is that where It's a Wonderful Life came from? That movie with Jimmy Stewart?
No,
that was Bedford Falls.
But yeah. Fall River, it's one of these, you know, mill blue collar towns, a lot of jobs lost, still trying to figure out its identity all these years later. Trying to come back with education and tech and things like that. It's the story repeats. These great old working class towns that suddenly don't have the jobs that they once did.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot of character, the city does, and it's got some rough areas, some areas that you might not want to you know, stop the car too long. And then it's got some beautiful spots, and it's all mixed together in that city.
It's like many cities.
That's right. It's a story that's played out across the country for sure. I mean, it's an American story, and this is an American story. You know, we get captivated by this. I mean, you know, talk about history repeating. O.J. Simpson, right? I mean, you know, Lizzie was the O.J. of her day.
Absolutely.
Everybody paid attention.
She didn't have Shapiro in the Dream Team.
No, but it was in the papers, and you'd read these transcripts and go, come on, of course she did it. And then she's found innocent, and everyone throws their hands up and say, how did she get away with that? It's perplexing for sure.
What do you think ghosts are, Jeff?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? So it's the most basic fundamental definition would be it's history demanding to be remembered. It's a connection to the past on a more ethereal level. I think in some ways we may not mean to. We're not talking about black magic or conjuring or anything. We don't even mean to. It's just we walk into some locations. We walk onto Gettysburg's battlefield. We walk into the Queen Mary, and we know what happened there, and we put ourselves through time and space into that location, and we pull that time and space to our location, and we mix with it. So I think in that case, you're talking about something that's just maybe it's sort of like a movie that plays over and over. But then you've got those experiences that are not like a movie, that are interactive, where there's communication, or often people will see someone they knew in life, a loved one, grandma, who passed away, and there's some sort of back and forth there, whether it's just a closure message, something. I think it's almost undefinable, because when we say ghost, it's everything from, you know, a misty shape that we talk about around the campfire to grandma who we love dearly who just passed away a few weeks ago. It's such a wide berth. But no matter what it is, there's a word for it in every language. There's a cultural understanding of it in every continent. They're in history books. They're in religious texts over and over, and they're not going away, no matter what you choose to believe or not believe.
What are poltergeists?
Now, poltergeists, is you get a little more technical, right? And people who study parapsychology would tell you that it seems to be related to living people, not dead ones. So noisy ghost is the translation in German. The idea is that we have this psychokinetic ability. We all do, and some more profound than others. And sometimes we don't even know when or how we're using it. So, for example, you're in a home and a dish just breaks, shatters right there on the countertop, and no one touched it. It could be that was a manifestation of a living person in the room at the time, and they didn't even know they did it. The idea that they could make a knock on the wall, they could make a glass break, or even something sound like footsteps. And that's something that's really intriguing. And what's great about that is that, you know, groups like Princeton, right? Ivy League school, had the PAIR, the Princeton Energy Anomalies Research Laboratory. They studied ESP. They did experiments. For example, they had a random number generator. Let's say numbers 1 through 100. And they would sit people down and say, I want you to focus on it being greater than 50, higher. Focus on higher, higher, higher. And you would stare at this number generator, and it would keep generating numbers, and they would write it all down. And someone else would say lower. You know, I just stare at this. I want you to focus on lower, lower, lower. And other people just stare at the numbers. That was the control group. They found that they could measurably move the randomness of a certain number of random numbers. It should be 50 every time, but some people could get it up to 51. Some people got it down to 49. Enough to cause an effect just by focusing their mind. So really, you've got Princeton sort of proving we have these abilities to some degree in the lab. And the next question is, could it be bigger than that? Could it be enough to break a glass or knock on the wall? I think we can. And that we would label a poltergeist.
Remember the movie The Lady in White?
Oh, God. I don't.
It was a weird one about a kid who got locked into a school where a little girl was murdered, and he kept seeing the ghost of her.
Oh.
But it had something to do with the mother at the end, and she was a ghost. It was something. I got to find that again, Jeff.
Yeah. Sometimes these things are, the idea of unfinished business, right? That comes up again and again. Lizzie Borden, right? There is unfinished business. That house haunts us. Two people were murdered. Nobody was punished for it. It doesn't matter that it's been over a century and a quarter since it happened. It still haunts us. It bothers us. Justice was not served. And that, it's just one of the many things that calls us to locations like these.
1988 movie, The Lady in White. Just try to find it.
Okay, you just Googled that.
How do you know that?
I'm psychic.
Let's go to the phones. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's go to Dayton, Ohio to get things started. East of the Rockies, Chester's with us. Hi, Chester.
Hey, George. Hey, Jeff. I got a ghost story for you guys. I figured you'd enjoy tonight.
All right. Sure. Great.
So a little bit of background. I basically have a lot of what you would consider shamans as friends because of my life journey. Let's just make it quick. And so this is a story that one of them shared with me, and I know this guy is legit because of the other stuff he does. So he was asked to come and help with a ghost problem because these people had, the situation that happened that triggered the whole thing was they were remodeling, and the poltergeist or ghost or whatever it is showed up and pinned the girl to the wall. The two Amish guys who were there working on it were so terrified they left, and they wouldn't even come back for their tools. And the family was horrified, like, what do we do? What do we do? And so my friend was a locally known upstate New York shaman that in those people in spiritual circles said, listen, this guy's the real deal. Have him come down. So he goes there, and he casts the sacred circle. Now, remember, this is information he shared with me because we would talk about stuff to kind of try to figure all this stuff out amongst ourselves. He casts his sacred circle, and he summons the spirit that's behind all this. And it turned out that it was a minister from, like, an ancient, not Indian ancient, but, like, 1700s, 1800s church, and that had been their spot, and they weren't going to leave, and they were mad. They were mad that they were there. And he tried to talk him into leaving, but, he wasn't successful, and that was the end of the story. But the girl, what we thought was that because the minister was still there with the congregation, that perhaps this is why he had enough spiritual force to affect matter. So that was one of the ghost stories that was shared with me.
What do you think of that, Jeffrey?
Chester, were you able to verify that there was a church there before?
Unfortunately, my friend died before I was able to follow up on that. And the circumstances around his death were not good and very suspicious. He was an astral traveler, and so I did not get to follow up on that. There's a few stories I have that are really good that I just didn't get to follow up on. But if you, Jeff, would like to talk to me about some of that stuff, I would gladly share it with you. Unfortunately, I might be able to get the information about where it was because his wife might still know.
Sure.
I've since then moved, and I now live in Ohio.
Yeah, no, that's one of those things where, when I hear stories like that, my next question is always, well, was it there? And that's stuff you can search. There's town hall records, there's newspaper archives, there's all kinds of things. If there was a property even close by, that's something that we can figure out. And when that validates what someone got from spirit or whatever, to me, that's just amazing. That makes for just an incredible story to tell.
Jeff, did you ever check out the Lemp Mansion in St. Louis?
Oh, I sure have.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Suicides, everything there.
Yeah, the Lemp Brewery. That Lemp family was definitely had some issues, right?
Like, they did.
Was
they
it
did.
Three suicides?
I think there were three.
Three, yeah. And the strange thing about suicide, of course, is that it's contagious among peer groups, which is a sad fact of it. And there seems to be some hereditary nature to it, where if one relative goes, then it's more likely that others will as well. And it's one of the things that just makes it even more tragic than it already is.
Yeah, something was wrong with that family.
Yeah, for sure.
Deeply.
For sure.
Strange things. Of everything you've been on, every ghost hunt, every trip, what has scared you?
Living people.
It's always touche.
We were in a place called Volcano, California, which is up north near Sacramento. This town, I think the population literally is like 90. And by the way, this was the original capital of California because they had all the gold stored there during the Civil War, and then things moved, and it obviously was not the capital. So we were there. The St. George Hotel was the haunt, but there was a little cemetery in town. And we're out there late at night and just kind of poking around the cemetery, and a drunk guy just walks up, pulls out a gun, a living guy, by the way, and says, you know, you want to become a ghost tonight? That was scary. Right, like no,
jeez.
no spirit has ever threatened my life, but I
right.
have had
like that.
People do it. So that's unnerving. And you know, the other time, actually, at Eastern State Penitentiary, I don't know if it was the night we were all there, but I was walking down one of those cell blocks alone, and it was a dark one. You know, some were a little bit lighter than others. You know, and there was obviously no lights on above.
Exactly.
And I was walking through the middle of it, and it was just darker than dark. And I was petrified. And I didn't see anything. I didn't feel anything. I didn't hear anything. I just felt great anxiety inside of me. And I got sort of analytical about it. And I said, all right, wait a minute. Number one, I'm going to listen to my body, and I'm going to get out of here. And I turned around, and I walked back to the middle, that round rotunda. And I got back to the middle, and I said, okay, I'm okay here. This is fine. And then I walked down a different one. I said, oh, that's fine, too. Let me try that again. And I got a quarter of the way down that cell block. And I felt that fear again, and I said, you know what, I'm not going to tempt this a third time. And I just left. And I don't know what was there lurking or what was not there, but I do know that I've done this long enough that I think we should listen to that inner voice, wherever we are, by the way, whether, you know, it's a paranormal investigation or a dark alley or a building or with a stranger, right? We listen to that voice because that's coming from us, and you'll find no greater truth.
Why do you keep coming back for more, Jeff?
I want that experience again, just like the first time. It's happened a few times. I want answers. I want my own answers. I will be glad to share anything I gather along the way because I think that's just the nature of who I am and what I do. But I want that experience again because it's so invigorating. It's so it makes you realize just how much bigger the universe is, how much we don't know. And I take great comfort in the unknown. I like to know that there's still riddles to be solved out there, and that's probably a big part of why I do it. I want the next experience.
Are your books still available?
They are, yeah. Wherever you get your books, Amazon or local bookstores, and you know, always getting to work on new ones too. So
spell out your website for folks.
Yeah, it's jeffbelanger.com, JeffBelanger.com, and you can find everything I'm doing, my story tour, which is mainly online now, thanks to COVID. All of it's there, everything that I'm doing.
We're going to come back in a moment with Jeff and take some final phone calls with him. His website, as he just mentioned, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Don't forget to follow us on our YouTube channel, by the way. It's free to sign up. Just go to Coast to Coast AM Official in the YouTube search bar and just click away. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to be talking about how cosmic waves from the sun are affecting us in a great way. And then later on in the program, we're going to be talking about the purpose of consciousness, the supernatural, and telekinesis. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Jeff Belanger. It's our final segment with Jeff. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And again, how can people get this stream of the Lizzie Borden House, which starts Friday, Jeff?
You want to go to thedarkzone.tv, and that's where you can get the tickets to figure out and see it and everything. It's August 28th to 31st, live, round the clock, from the Lizzie Borden Murder House in Fall River, Massachusetts. And I'll be there.
Are you going to sleep in that house?
I'm not sleeping in that house, but I believe the host, Susan Slaughter, is. She's arriving, I think, today. Is there today or tomorrow is the day she's arriving. So, yes, she will be there round the clock, and some of the tour guides and historians attached to the house will be popping in and out to, you know, at a safe distance, of course, to talk about their experiences and talk a little bit more about the history and what it's like to live there.
Let's go back to the phones. Walton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Walter, go ahead.
Hi, George. It's always great to be on with you, George.
Hey, Walt.
George, I don't want to nitpick, but I don't think that Al Capone was ever an eastern state in Philadelphia. I know he spent like 12 years in Alcatraz. I don't know whether you want to.
He was there. He was there for a short time. I don't know how long he was in there, but he was there.
I know he was in Alcatraz. I thought Eastern State was, Capone died in 47, but he was released about 4 to 5 years before 47. And I think that, he had incurable syphilis.
That, and he was also going nutty.
It was eight months, 1929 to 1930, he was at Eastern State.
Well, he was.
8 months, yep.
Okay, well, then I'm corrected then. George, I was going to ask Mr. Belanger whether he had ever visited a town about 25 miles north of where I live called Jim Thorpe.
I sure have.
It's where the great athlete Jim Thorpe is entombed. And prior to 1953, when Jim Thorpe died, the town was called Mock Chunk.
Right, that's right, and they renamed it. And Jim Thorpe had no connection to that town other than they said, hey, we'll take his remains and honor him. And
how about that?
That's how it came. Yeah, there's a great little haunt, the hotel right there on Main Street. I stayed in it, a great little haunted hotel. And a couple other – oh, and the jail that still has the handprint on the wall. Right, Walt?
Who played the part of Jim Thorpe in the movie?
Oh, boy, I don't know.
Going way back.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that would be
another classic. But they did. They honored him by naming a city after him.
Yeah, it's a cute town right there in Pennsylvania. And the best ghost story in town, though, there's this jail, and the name's jumping out of my head at the moment. But there were executions that took place inside the jail, and there's a handprint on the wall that they can't seem to paint over, and it was one of the accused. It was his handprint that's still there. They sell postcards with the handprint. You can see it for yourself. It's a pretty creepy little story, and the gallows are right there, still set up. Obviously they're reproductions now, but this tiny little jail with the gallows and the handprint on the wall, and you feel it.
Do you think with modern DNA and stuff that they could have solved the Lizzie Borden case today?
Again, no sign of struggle. So that would mean the killer would have to leave some DNA there. I don't know. You would like to think that we would do better today, that they would be able to control the crime scene better, that there would be anything, polygraphs, something related to it. I think Bridget the maid didn't talk enough. I would like to have heard more. Because, again, if you've been in that house and you're on the third floor and you realize right below your feet someone is being killed with an axe, how do you miss that unless you're in on it or you were paid to keep silent or something, right? Like she knew something. I can think of nothing else. So if in some way I think she's complicit.
Let's go to David, truck driving in Illinois. Welcome to the show, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I got a question, Jeff, because you've made a career out of this. I have a 19-year-old daughter that tells me that she sees ghosts all the time and she helps them. And she's told me she's very descriptive in describing these ghosts. So, to me, that she's to give that many details, she's being totally honest about it. And meanwhile, you've made a career out of this. Have you interviewed anybody to find out maybe why some people can see these often? Because she sees them all the time. And why they can communicate with them. I mean, she talks to them like the regular people.
Sure. I think all of us have different sensitivities and gifts. I don't see them or hear them. But I've talked to plenty of people who do. And some folks can seem to hear them better than others. Some just see them but don't hear them. Some can sort of sense their presence but can't see them or talk to them. It's across the board. And that's we're the same way with living people, right? Some people are really good at picking up the emotions and feelings of other people, more empathic. Others are not. And that's the spectrum. So I believe, I like to use the word empathy, right? The idea that we can pick up on others. And that's true of living people. And I think some folks, maybe like your daughter, have this ability to also do that with folks that are no longer with us.
Jeff, do you think parents should encourage children when they talk about these ghosts? Some people think imaginary ghosts.
It depends on the age. 19, sure. You know, she's an adult. You know, we can talk about that. When they're real young, when my daughter was real young, she had a few experiences, and I think it's important to sort of listen and let them lead the conversation, you know, when they ask questions. When they ask questions about life and death, what happened to my pet that died? You know, what happened to my uncle who died? What does it mean? You know, how much detail do you want to go into? And I think, obviously, this is so subjective when it comes to parenting, but you want your kids to feel safe, right? You want your kids to feel like they're in an environment where they can grow and learn, but not be judged, too. So I think maybe listen more than encourage would be what I would do if it were my own daughter that I thought had these abilities at a young age. And then as she gets older, then she can certainly explore it more, and I could help guide her there. But too young, I think, might be just listen.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee. Amber's with us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Amber.
Hi. How are you guys?
We're great. Thanks.
Good.
Well, I have a few questions.
Sure.
For Jeff. First of all, have you ever stayed at the Congress Inn in Nashville?
I have not, but I have heard of it.
What's going on? What's going on there, Amber?
It's supposedly very haunted. It was used as when the Civil War was happening.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay.
They ran out of hospital space, so they took this hotel, and they actually started burying the injured soldiers in the wall.
Ooh.
Like in the basement, like in the walls of the basement. So it's supposedly very haunted. And there is a case of one person in 1987 said they saw a ghost on the bottom of the bed.
Ooh. Have you stayed there?
I have not, but I'm very curious about it. but also, I was wondering if you thought, do you really think the Lizzie Borden, do you think it was she just paid off the maid, or do you think she may have been possessed?
Or none of the above.
Or none of the above, yeah. I don't know if there was a payoff. There's some suggestions that maybe Lizzie had a relationship with the maid that was romantic. We don't know. We have no idea. So, I don't know.
Were they both in on it? Who knows?
Right. Were they both in on it? If they were, they didn't seem to stay together after the whole ordeal.
Was there an inheritance after the fact?
So there was. And in fact, Lizzie and her sister bought a mansion, a more stately mansion, a mile away in Fall River called Maplecroft, and which is now also owned by the same owners as the Lizzie Borden house.
I mean, the father was well off as a banker, wasn't he?
Yep. He was well off. And Lizzie, your whole life, felt like we should live in a bigger house than this. We should have a mansion. They could afford one. But he chose to save his money rather than spend it on a bigger house. And so that's one of the things that she and her sister did, was they bought a bigger, more stately mansion, just a mile away from that house on Second Street.
In Georgetown, New York, Melissa's with us on the Wild Card line. Hello, Melissa.
Oh, George, thanks for taking my call. The thunderstorm is approaching, so I might have to hang up real quick.
Okay.
I want to ask Jeff a question, but I want to say something to you quick. Do you remember I talked to you quite a while ago about being in the horse business, and I know you were in the horse business?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And also thank you for putting Michael Bell on again after the last time I talked to you, because, I got three people arrested already.
You did?
They were surveilling me illegally.
Well, good for you.
Oh, they were trying
Stay
to
tough.
Steal my property. Okay. So anyway, and you must feel terrible about what happened in Beirut.
That was not fun, that's for sure.
Terrible, yeah.
Okay, and also, I live off the grid, so I can't take advantage of the dating service.
Why not? But, use your cell phone.
I don't have one. I have a landline.
Oh, geez. Okay, but hurry up. We're almost out of time.
Radios.
Let's get your thing in before the storm hits you.
I Okay. So, Jeff, I heard a program on NPR about a year ago. And at the very end of the program about Lizzie Borden and the murders, they said that a neighbor had possibly been suspicious about a guy. He was a horseman, actually, who worked on a horse farm across the river with Mr. Borden's brother on a horse farm, and that he had, I forget the word, but felt alienated, that he was really angry about something. And a neighbor said that they saw him walking up the street that same day. Did you ever hear anything like that?
I did, yeah. They were looking for suspects, and they were trying to focus in on men. Who would Mr. Borden have spurred in business or whatever? And yeah, he was one of the suspects. But enough didn't line up that they didn't arrest him or anything. It was just Lizzie who was arrested.
Did Lizzie have, because you know her history, Jeff, better than we do, did she have any problems with the parents publicly or anything like that prior to?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. There was some question. Again, it was not her mother, right? It was her stepmother. Borden was her stepmother. And so there was some question over whether the will was about to be changed and whether Abby was going to get more of the share than Lizzie was comfortable with. That could have been a possible motive. But, yeah, it's definitely – it's a curiosity. You know, if she didn't get along, you know, why didn't she move out? Yes, I know it's 1890. She's 30 and she's not married, and that's not customary. However, you know, she did eventually move in with her sister, so she did have some options. She chose not to.
And again, she was acquitted.
She was acquitted. It is such a perplexing case. It's why we're still talking about it.
That is amazing. Now, the house itself, can you feel weird things when you walk through it?
Absolutely, and I think so much of that has to do with the decor. I mean, there's crime scene photos on the wall. There are binders filled with all the old newspaper clippings that you can sit and read. There's evidence on display in some of the cabinets, and again, it looks like it's 1892 in there, from the old stove and the oven to the furniture to the wallpaper to the dresses that are on display. This is what that house looked like back when the murders took place. And you walk through that, and, you know, when you stand right where Andrew Borden lost his life, right where Abby Borden lost her life, on the second floor in the guest room, if you don't feel something, you're not human. You know, I mean, someone lost their life right there, and you connect to that.
Were they well-liked, the two of the people who got killed?
Well, Andrew Borden was a prominent guy in Fall River. There were tons of Bordens.
Well, he was the banker, right?
He was the banker. So as with any banker, you know, if you need money and he loans it to you and you're successful with it, he's probably a guy you like a lot.
You're going to like him. That's right.
And if you owe him money and you can't pay it, you probably don't like him. So
unless he's lenient on you.
Right. Well, you know, he had his friends, and I wouldn't say he was any more or less liked than any other banker in town, but definitely a prominent citizen all around.
Jeff, once again, let's tell folks how they can watch the stream from August 28th, Friday through Monday.
It's thedarkzone.tv is where you can get all the information, see who's going to be part of it. There's a great lineup of people. You can get your tickets, and you can watch. You can stream 24/7. It's going to be a really cool event.
Is this going to be a regular thing for the Dark Zone?
Well, this is number two, so let's see how it goes. I think they do want to do this in other places, and it's pretty great, especially if you don't have the money to travel or the ability, as we are right now. This is a way for us to get into the haunts, to explore it, to hear from various experts and see these places for ourselves. This is what we can do, and so I think we should do it.
Great way to have a little haunted party. Just have everybody over your house when you watch the stream, huh?
There you go.
All right, Jeff, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, George. It is always a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Jeff Belanger. Again, his website is his name, jeffbelanger.com. A couple of his books, Who's Haunting the White House, The World's Most Haunted Places, and he's going to participate in the live stream on Friday into Monday, the Lizzie Borden Murder House in Fall River, Massachusetts. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Tim Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.